I'm Marva King, and you're at our third and last 2010 CARE RP National Webcast, and I welcome you. We have a full agenda again, and let me just introduce you to people in the room. I am the CARE Grants Team Lead. We have in the room Michelle Mandolia, who is our Measurement Evaluation Team Lead, who will be moderating the session, and also Jennifer Connor, who is my counterpart. You see his name a lot. He is the one that you ask direct questions to with the RFP. On the phone, I believe we're going to have someone from the grants office. Francis Roth will be on the phone.
I just joined.
Hello. Frank, is that you?
Yes, I just joined.
Okay, great. Thanks. As well as we usually have a couple of our regional CARE grant team leaders who are also CARE coordinators on the line as well. And I really appreciate their input. If they're a CARE coordinator, I wish, before you speak, please identify yourself. Basically, this is a Q&A, question and answer. We go over a very short PowerPoint presentation that we're going to start in a minute. Just to give you an overview, a quick overview of what the CARE program is. We also, of course, direct you to looking thoroughly at the RFP as well as our question and answer document. A lot of the questions you have are in the question and answer document as well. All of these webcasts are recorded, audio recorded, and there's a link on our webpage, the CARE webpage, that tells you how to get a hold of those recordings. I believe that the February 2nd webcast is already up, and the ones for this week will probably be up in 6 weeks or so. Again, the RFP is proposals are due March 9th, and we're going to get started now. As we said in the past, we will not answer specific project description type questions. So we will answer general questions that we can't answer. We cannot tell you if a lead project you're deciding on to work on is best for the CARE program. We will tell you what the CARE program asks for, which is a multimedia assessment across your neighborhood. So that includes more than lead. Okay, so we're going to start it on the webcast. Panel presentation. Hopefully the ones on the phone have already downloaded that. If you have not, it is on the CARE Coolin website, so you can follow along. Again, also on the Coolin website is a evaluation of this session that you can do online. So the first page of the PowerPoint talks to you about what is CARE. What is CARE? CARE program is, its title is Community Action for a Renewed Environment, acronym is CARE, and it is a community-based, community-driven program created to build partnerships to help communities understand and reduce their risk from all sources. Again, these are local partnerships we're building from a diverse group of people. Next slide. So why did we create the CARE? We created it in response to a number of community requests for help, a number of community help locally in their neighborhood to address their concerns, and they wanted the help to be given to them so they can figure it out for themselves and not have anyone studying and researching them. So CARE was developed as a means to address their concerns. And it goes beyond national regulation. Again, if you know about EPA at all, we have rules and rights we have to follow. And a lot of your needs and problems are more of a cumulative risk type of problem. It's a multi-dimensional type of problem, and it does not fit into a national regulation. We wanted to integrate agency programs to improve support for communities. Again, we partner across the agency for this, and that's what CARE does. We wanted to mobilize new resources and use local knowledge to achieve our results. And the most important thing, I believe, is that we develop community consensus around your problems with the CARE program. So the goals and the strategies, which are the next three slides, are actually in the RFP. You should read them. I'm not going to read them here because they are what the CARE program is all about, and you need to know what these goals and strategies are to write your proposal. So please read those in your RFP. The slide after the strategy slide is thematic, and it talks about how CARE works. And so if you look at that in a nutshell, you will see. The CARE Level 1 grant that we award that is up to $100,000 is a cooperative agreement that asks you to join together and build your local partnership from a diverse group of stakeholders. And then once you do that, we want you to look across your neighborhood to get a good understanding of what those problems are. We want you to identify those problems. As a partnership, we want you to come together and consensus on which of those problems you want to address next. When you've done that completely, then you are eligible for a Level 2. Of course, you can do that out of the CARE program. You do not have to do that within the CARE program, but you have to do those processes eligible for a Level 2. And when you have a Level 2 is when you tell us that you've done that Level 1 work, and now you want to implement solutions and reduce risk in your neighborhood. And that grant is worth up to $300,000, which is a larger grant because you're going to be doing a lot of more involved work, technical work to reduce those risks. And we also want you to let us know how you intend to go on self-sustaining once the federal funds is over. We have found that CARE is creating a lot of change within the agency. We are managed on a matrix. That means that we are managed across the agency with different programs. We have two co-chairs, and you'll see their names at the end of this presentation. One co-chair is from the Office of Solid Waste and Emergency Response. Another co-chair is from the Office of Water. I'm actually from the Office of Air and Radiation. We have different programs that we matrix across the agency to help work on your project. So what we're doing is that CARE, as I said, it was created because you needed help. It also was created as a way to build on existing community-based programs and some that are no longer here. We took the best of everything and brought it into the CARE program. We have a strong D.C. Headquarters regional partnership. You heard me mention that there were probably some of my CARE regional coordinators on this call. We work hand-in-hand as a partnership on an equal basis with them. At the same time, when your grant is awarded, if you're fortunate enough to become one of our CARE grantees, a regional team is formed around your needs, right, specific to your project needs. We feel that we are changing the way in the environmental program are working within the agency. We are beginning to look at your problems the same way you are from a cumulative risk approach, and that's why the partnership is great. And we have a two-way communication between our EPA and communities. We actually have a training workshop every year that that you are asked to budget into your project budget, and that workshop takes place with 50% engagement of the communities and 50% of EPA. We do not tell you what you need to have in your workshop. You tell us. Next slide. Again, I already mentioned that how we're funded, Level 1 and Level 2. We can go on to the next slide. I mentioned that already. You need to know what kind of money we've given out in the past. We've been in existence for 5 years now. And we give... just about all of our budget goes to the CARE project because we feel that there's a need there. And so far, we were able to have partnerships in about 77 communities. So we've given 77 grants out, and we have partnerships in about 68 communities across the nation. Totally, since 2005, we've given $12 million. We like to say care is more than money because it is. We give you technical support through our regional teams. We give you information. We try to network interagency wide for you. We work very closely with HUD and CDC and other federal agencies. We have networking opportunities, and our shared learning and our networking is at its utmost during our national workshop. We have a publications tools page on our website, and you'll see some of this information there. And we're very proud about the fact that our care work research guide is a keyword search. You can type in what you need to know about lead or asthma or children's health or environmental justice, and a variety of resources will come up for you.
Yeah.
Where we actually have partnered with CDC and ATSDR to create a grants guide for you. That's the way that we help to show you ways that you can become sustainable with other funding. We have a 10-step roadmap that we promote on our website. It helps a level one understand what the needed in that overall assessment of your neighborhood. And we have a community guide to EPA's voluntary programs. We call them partnership programs. It's where EPA offers unique advice and assistance for certain problems you may have. Say if you want to address school bus idling, there's a school for tools program and different things that we have for you. The map just shows you where we are and those 18 partnerships across the nation. We're everywhere. We're even in Alaska and Hawaii and the Virgin Islands. And those are our contacts. Again, Gail Bonanno is the care co-chair from the Office of Water. Pat Carey is the co-chair from the Office of Solid Waste Emergency Response. So again, this webcast is for you. It's for us to hear your questions, and we want to get started. And I'm going to turn this over to my capable moderator, Michelle Mandolia, who will tell you what you need to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, good afternoon, good morning, everyone, depending on where in the country you are. I just want to begin with a reminder about some housekeeping you might have seen on the slide in the presentation. You may have a mute option on your phone. If you do not, there is a mute option given to you. Star 6 your line, and that keeps everything quieter for the up to 200 people on this call. You can rejoin us if you have a question over the phone by #6ing the line. So that we ask that you star 6 at all times if you are not joining us to ask a question when that option is given to you. Thank you. And so at this portion of the webcast, we'll be taking your questions. What we do is switch between online submissions of questions and phone questions coming in over the phone. I will be switching back and forth to give everyone a chance to ask at least one question before we go to multiple questions. I do ask that that you follow my guidance and ask a question only if you're a first-time questioner over the phone when I do ask for questions over the phone. I will be following that rule with questions submitted over the Internet. You can submit as many questions as you'd like over the Internet. I'll be screening them myself, and we'll be going through for first-time questioners, and then we'll be going back for repeat questioners. So I haven't gotten to a second question from you, just hold on until the end of the call, and we'll be coming back around for your second and third questions. Thus far in the first two webcasts, we have been able to get through all of the questions. We hope to do that again. If we seems like we're not going to be able to get to all of the questions by the end of the call, we'll let you know at the end of the call how we plan to address those questions, because we will address all of your questions. So I just wanted to mention two other things because of the competition policy. If you are coming to us with a specific question about your specific project, we are not going to be able to answer that question. So we will be reiterating that throughout. We'll answer you generally, but do not expect an answer about your specific project and whether it is a good idea or not. And also, as we mentioned, there's a question and answer document. It's going to have a lot of great answers to many of your questions, so we may be referring you to that document at certain times for your questions. So at this point, thank you. It sounds like everyone is star fixing and on mute. Wonderful, so everyone can hear. I'm going to start with a question from the Internet, and then we'll be going to the phone. So the first question is from Turkey Heath in New York. It says, we have been a bit discouraged to apply for this grant. Some of the partners that we have approached have suggested that the EPA CARE grant is generally decided in advance and not worth the effort to apply. There seems to be a sense that there are certain applicants that will be given preference. How can we talk to our potential partners and guarantee to them that this is a competitive grant and that all applicants will be fairly considered?
Taki, I'm sorry that you feel discouraged about that. That is something that is absolutely not true. And in fact, it is not only not true, but it is illegal for us to do. We are a highly competitive grant program, and everyone has equal access to getting a grant from us. This is the first time I've had that concern raised, so I'm disturbed by that. It is a very competitive grant program. We received 235 applications last year alone. And so everyone had equal amount of level to get a grant. We have two ways to evaluate. The first way is in the region. So these grants are sent out to the region. If you're eligible, they're sent out to the region. And the region has a scoring evaluation, and then the top four scores from each region is sent to the national selection panel, which I sit on and the people in this room sit on, and then it's decided who gets the award. So there's a couple of ways that potential grantees' applications are moved up the chain, and I don't see how we can ever pre-pick anything from that type of process.
So we'll turn to the phone. If we have a questioner over the phone, please pose your question now, and I just ask that you give your name and where you're from.
Hi, good afternoon. My name is Christian Gustafson from Below the Surface, and yeah. I wanted to see, we do a lot of work with watershed awareness, and how much focus is or has been on watersheds within the CARE grant program?
Well, we have a number of organizations who have been working under the watershed and arena who have came to the CARE and gotten awards. So I don't know if you... what do you mean by focus, but just to let you know, it is a competitive process, and they have equal competitiveness with others. If they write a good project, and it's looking not just at water, but looking at a broad base of environmental media, then they are just as competitive as anyone else. And if you go to our website, the CARE website, and look at some of our past awardees, you will see some of those are watersheds. Projects. We have a very, stellar one up in Marquette, Michigan, Central Lake, I can't remember the
Lake
name.
Superior.
Lake Superior, yeah. And they're stellar, and they've been one of our best grantees.
But again, to reinforce that, CARE wants you to look across all media. So if you come in with a proposal in just one media, it is not going to fare very well.
Mm-hmm. So we have had, I think, either some previous watershed grantees or some folks who have taken a watershed approach that do come to the CARE program but need to start with a level one because they need to take a broader look before moving on to a level two process.
And just as an overall statement to everyone, please do look at the write-ups on each of the 66 communities. It
mm-hmm.
provides a lot of information, and it really gives you a sense of what our successful grantees and the variety of projects that fall under the CARE umbrella.
Well, I really appreciate your feedback, and we just finished an expedition. We've been underway for about a month, so I didn't have a chance to do too much preliminary investigation in this program, but really encouraged by it from what I've read, and thank you for your time.
Right. Well, I'm going to turn to the phone again because, amazingly, we don't have any questions on the Internet right now. So do we have another questioner over the phone?
Yes. Can you hear me? The name is Al Harris out of White Plains, Maryland.
Yes, we can hear you, Al.
Okay. Yes, I was wondering if this is eligible to participate. We're a nonprofit, but we also partner with a small business, and we was wondering if conjoining two of us, are we able to be eligible to participate in this program?
The person who has to apply for the grant, the organization has to be a nonprofit.
Okay,
the nonprofit can apply. The business entity can be a partner. A business person is not eligible to apply.
And only one person can be an applicant.
Okay, I understand.
Mm-hmm. Do we have another question over the phone? Okay, turning back to the Internet, because we do have some questions there now. We have one from Evan in Syracuse, New York. Do all three required partner types, community resident, local business, and local government, need to be specifically identified and in place prior to submitting a proposal, or will proposals missing one or more of these pieces be considered?
Evan, for a level one care grant, you do not have to have all of these partner types in place. You have to talk about how you're going to engage them, but they do not have to be in place. For a level two care project, they do have to be in place because it has to be an established partnership, and they all have to be in place for you, but not for a level one.
I'm going to go ahead and take another one from the Internet because we had a few from the phone. Here's a second. This is from Roxana in New York. Last year, our application for a level two was rejected as not having met the level one requirements. After the debriefing, after the debriefing, that decision was reversed, but of course it was too late. It seemed that most of the applications should have focused on how we met the level one requirements as opposed to covering the actual project in depth. Can you give guidance on how to weight these portions of the application?
I don't recall the debriefing that you're talking about, Roxana, but I will tell you this, that you have to articulate how you've met the level one requirement. You have to do that
very clearly to be
eligible. And you have to do that so you can show us that you have done that work. Then after that, you have to articulate how you meet the evaluation criteria for a level two. So when you say how to weight these portions of the application, I think they're all equally weighted. If you do not show us how you clearly articulated the level one process, you will be ineligible. Once you show us that, you also, to have a competitive high score, you have to, you know, write very, you know, details about your evaluation criteria for the level two.
Mm-hmm. And this is Margaret Millard. I'm the Region 5 Care Program Manager. In the RFP, there is the evaluation criteria, and we strictly follow it, and we give the points exactly where evaluation criteria says, and that's what we use to decide who gets a grant and who doesn't. So if you really look at that, that'll give you a sense of what is the sort of the weights of each section.
Mm-hmm.
Page 30 to 34.
Great. Okay. So turning back to the phone, is there someone with a first-time questioner with a question from the phone? I'll turn back to the Internet because we have several questions here. One from Jan in California. On slide 11, I noticed that the total dollar amounts awarded have gone down since the peak in FY07. Could you offer an explanation for this decline?
It's pretty simple. It's just the economy and our budget. The economy started declining and our budget started declining. We put just about all of our money, we only keep a very small portion of it out for administrative purposes. We put all of our money into the grants. Unfortunately, we were only able to award 9 last year. We actually ended up awarding 10 because one of our partners in EPA awarded a grant for us. And this year, we're planning on awarding at least 10.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'll go back to the phone and see if we have a first-time questioner. Turning back to the Internet, this is from Vicki in Wichita Falls, Texas. Is a pre-application required for the CARE grant?
No, it's not required. You just submit your proposal as stated in the RFP.
Yeah, we don't even want pre-application. We want an application from you before 4 o'clock on March 9th.
Mm-hmm. The second question is, do we need to have written letters in support of collaboration and partnership to attach to the original application?
Yeah, I will answer this way. It's a very competitive program, and we do look at the letters of support. No, you're not required to have letters of support, but if you have partners out there who can talk about how they intend to work with this project and give you some in-kind support or technical assistance, or it does nothing but help your competitiveness of this proposal. So I would advise you to have at least a couple of letters of support because you want to have a high score.
And these are the attachments to your application. Remember, level 1, there's no limit on the number of attachments. Level 2, you have up to 5 attachments up to a total of 50 pages.
I'll turn back to the phone. Do we have a first-time questioner over the phone?
Anyone with the last name that begins with A.
Okay. Turning back to the Internet, will you please repeat the scoring evaluations for regional consideration? Did you say something about 2 ways? I think here we're just talking about in the RFP it lists that there are 2 stages in the selection process, that it gets scored in the region according to the selection, the ranking process as listed explicitly in the RFP, and then it goes to a national selection panel at EPA headquarters, including regional representatives and headquarters representatives. And I think Dennis was just listing the pages in the RFP.
Yeah. There's only 1 evaluation criteria. Those are the pages in the RFP. Those are used. And on page 37 of the RFP, it tells you a little bit about the process.
Mm-hmm.
The process is multi-stage, multi-step,
mm-hmm.
but it's the same evaluation criteria.
Right.
And also, under Section 5, under the evaluation criteria, after you go through the different weighted points, there'll be a page that talks about it's Section 5B, review and selection process. So if you look at your RFP, it will tell you exactly how it is determined for your all the way from your eligibility review to your evaluation team at the EPA region to the National Selection Committee. So again, everything is in the RFP. We're here to call, of course, to talk to you verbally, but you really need to read this very closely and you can get everything you need from it, as well as the Q&A document that's on the web.
Turning back to the phone, do we have a first-time questioner over the phone? Okay. We have a question from Marcy in Crete, Nebraska. The RFP specified that a budget narrative be included in the middle end of the proposal, Section 6, but the RFP also specifies that the budget narrative will be counted towards the 10-page limit. Am I reading this correctly, or can the budget narrative just be included as a completely separate attachment to avoid having it mistakenly counted towards the total page limit?
No, Marcy, the budget narrative is part of the 10 pages, and it tells you that under section 4C, it talks to talk under the narrative proposal format to that it's 10 pages and that it includes everything below that. And that includes the budget narrative.
We need from you three pieces to the application. The SF-424, the SF-424A, which is the budget, federal budget part, and then your 10-page narrative. You may also include attachments if you're so inclined.
Okay. Turning back to the phone just to check. Do we have a first-time questioner over the phone? Okay. We have a question from Cindy in Vermont. We are a very rural area, and in considering a door-to-door canvassing training program, how do we include the EPA project team in the task? Do you provide the volunteers for the neighborhood trainings, or do we find volunteers within our communities? And if so, would these agencies that we solicit volunteers from be considered a project team member?
Well, if you are lucky to be awarded, an EPA team is formed around your project. They're there for guidance and assistance. They are not there to be your volunteers. You have to do that within your partners as well as your community. Now, it's up to the EPA if you strike up a relationship with them and they are eagerly want to assist you, that is a personal relationship with your EPA partner.
Mm-hmm.
Second question about would these agencies that we solicit volunteers from be considered a project team member? It's up to you how you want to identify them. Some people identify them as partners. They don't have to be members of your organization.
Mm-hmm.
They could be members of your partnership.
Mm-hmm.
We don't prescribe that for you. That is up to you.
Mm-hmm.
We do tell people when they put together their partnership to have an eye towards what kinds of skills, techniques, resources various of the partners bring to the table.
Mm-hmm.
So across the board, that's a good approach, and you ought to think about that as you put together this team, propose this team.
Mm-hmm. As we mentioned, there are descriptions of our current and previous grantee projects on the CARE website. There are also grantee final reports, about 19 right now. We'll be posting more soon as well. Those are extensive reports, but you could look at one or two or sampling if you have an interest to see how others have structured their projects, if you would find that helpful. Turning to the phone, just to see, do we have a first-time questioner over the phone? Okay, at this point, I think all our questions over the Internet are second-time questioners, so I just want to check over the phone. Do we have someone who's previously asked a question who'd like to ask a second question over the phone?
Yes, I would. It's Al Harris again. And I was wondering, is there a minimum time frame for this project or work complete? Take, for instance, is it ongoing for a year that we have to complete this, or is it an 8-week program, summertime? Can you please elaborate on that?
Yeah, I'm sorry I didn't mention that earlier. You are awarded if you're a level one, you're awarded up to $100,000, and you have up to 2 years to complete that project.
Oh, 2 years.
Mm-hmm. And the same thing with a level two.
I think some of our grantees have completed it in about 18 months. I don't know that anybody has had a more accelerated time cycle than that.
Right. And even and we found, too, that with our grantees, sometimes they take a little longer than 2 years, and if they have to, we give them an extension, a time extension.
No cost
time extension with that.
Okay. Questions over the internet.
The watershed
one. Excuse me?
Was there another question on the phone?
Yeah. remember reviewing CARE ones. All of them were so bad. And then I
okay, well, don't forget to put your phone on star 6. We need you to put your phone on mute, please.
Follow the solicitation and stuff. Okay. I'm glad that you played it.
We'll take another one over the internet.
I know. I've been there.
Oh, please, excuse me, but you need to put your phone on mute. We can hear your conversation. Thank you.
So another question over the internet is the entire application available on the EPA website?
Yes.
Yes, it is. I'm sorry you haven't seen it yet. If you go to the www.epa.gov/care website, there's a little highlighted box in the right-hand side that says you can click on that and go right to the RFP page. On the RFP page, there's a click that takes you directly to the document itself. There's another click that takes you directly to the trial question and answer document. So please visit that website.
Mm-hmm.
It's the CARE website on the EPA internet.
Great. Okay. We have a first-time questioner over the internet. This is a question from Douglas in Vancouver, Washington. We have a local interagency partnership of city, county, and state environmental and public health agencies that has identified dangerous waste management and septic systems as the principal threat to our sole source aquifer. Does this meet the threshold of community involvement for level 2 eligibility?
It may meet a threshold for a partnership. I don't see where you have business, though, so it may not even meet that.
Or the affected community.
Right.
And per se.
Exactly, Michelle. But the problem you have here is that had you done that thorough examination across your place-based neighborhood of all the risks in your community, all the risks do not include just waste and septic systems.
Mm-hmm.
All the risks include air, water, waste, mm-hmm. and pesticides. It also includes social economic risks that are affecting the community. So I would advise you to go to the RFP. Section 1 has some descriptions there for you. There is, if you look in Section 1, numbers 5 and 6 paragraphs, talk about what it means for a community to gain an understanding of all their major risks. It also tells you what it means for you to set priorities. Because for a level one, you not only have to look at all those risks, you have to come to consensus around those risks and set priorities on what you're going to address. And so I don't think you quite have it yet, Douglas, unless you have some more information and it's not written in the on the website here.
And I'll just add to this, also community groups. You seem to have the government entities covered, but we're also looking for you to involve as important stakeholders community groups.
And don't forget, this has to be an established partnership that has those three major entities, community, business, and local government. It has to be established. It's not just something that comes together a few weeks before the RFP is done, because we look to see that that's established.
And that's an important difference between level one and level two.
Mm-hmm.
This is Sarah Stubb on the phone. I wanted to ask a question.
Yeah, I was just going to turn back to the phone. I'm sorry if you mentioned your name. Could you repeat it, please?
Yeah, this is Sarah Sharp in Fresno, California.
Yeah.
And I had a similar question, but actually kind of the reverse, where we have an existing group, but it's all community groups, environmental justice groups, and academic partners, and a few governmental, but not all of the environmental regulating agencies are involved currently. So for level one, what level of partnership do we need to achieve? Does it need to be a collaboration where, because we have monthly meetings, like do we need to start incorporating businesses and agencies into our monthly meetings, or can we, you know, just have a couple of sessions where we all gather and discuss the issue, and how what's the level of partnership that we're looking for, I guess.
All right, well, Sarah, it looks like you have that level already for level one. The only thing that I would add is that if you apply for level one, you articulate how you intend to engage business. A level one does not have to have business engagement yet. But to be competitive, we need to know what you're planning. I'm just telling you that because this is a very competitive program, and I want you to be competitive. A level one does not have to have an established partnership. They can build on some other partnerships out there like you say you have and come together around looking at those issues across their neighborhood.
And the different grantees and partnerships choose to involve, you know, entities in different ways depending on what works for them. So I don't think you need to choose to immediately include everybody you reach out to in all of your monthly meetings. You know, I think if you so decide quarterly and that type of thing, if the level of involvement is the question that you're asking, people make different choices. So if you're proposing a process, you can propose whatever your comfort level is. It's not one size fits all.
Right. And I would say from experience that I've seen from environmental justice partnerships who are just starting in a care level one, they tend to look at first the businesses in their local environment, like their cleaners or their nail salons or something, or the chamber of commerce, something like that to start bringing in that business completely.
Okay, thank you. That was very helpful.
Okay, great. So turning back to the Internet, we have a question. Has this grant program ever funded a project related to algae toxins in recreational waters?
Well, we fund projects that are multimedia, so we fund projects that are not just water issues. I'm not saying that the water issue is not hasn't been funded. I'm just saying that we have to look at more than that issue.
But we could. The fact of the matter is we have not, as far as I know. But that would certainly fall under this whole broad definition of environmental toxins.
Mm-hmm. Turning back to the phone, do we have a first-time questioner? Okay, do we actually have a repeat questioner? Because I see we only have repeat questions over the Internet. On the phone, any repeat questioners? Okay. On the Internet, the next question is there any weight placed on other funds committed? How many attachments to level one?
I would ask the people on the Internet to please sign your name to your question so we can have a sense of who we're talking to. We would appreciate that. That helps us go back and double check on things for ourselves. There is no weight placed on other funds committed. In fact, if you have something like that on your budget and you are awarded a grant, you are going to be called to task on that, and you have to adhere to the fact that you stated that you have other funds there. So we advise people not to put that on there.
And you get no special consideration for match.
Right. That is true. And you say how many attachments to a level one? Level ones can have as many attachments as they want. There's a limit to a level two attachment, and that's 50 attachments, as Dennis had said before.
Mm-hmm. And also keep in mind, there's human beings that have to read this, and having 150 pages of attachments probably isn't going to help your proposal. So use good judgment.
We'll turn back to the phone. Any first or second time questioners over the phone? Okay. Back to the Internet. Is it acceptable for other federal agencies to volunteer expertise with your project?
Yes. We welcome you to partner with other federal agencies. Some of our most stellar partnerships have other local federal agencies partnering with them. And we expect you to tap into that expertise.
Okay. I'll just take quickly another one over the Internet. If you complete ahead of the 2 years, is it acceptable to move into strategies that may be considered level two, such as cleanup? Oh, yeah, please, again.
Yes, please do. And we have what we call a bias for action in the CARE program. We ask you to do certain things, but, of course, if you have some urgent, burning toxin problems, we expect you to take action.
Yeah.
Right away.
Yeah. Turning back to the phone, do we have any questioners? Okay. I'll take another from the internet. This is from Cindy again in Vermont. I apologize for not looking at all the details in the RFP by this point, but are capital expenses allowed under this program? Maybe not large capital expenses, i.e. a truck, but what about a trailer for educational materials or small transportable equipment, i.e. a grinder or a paint can crusher? Yes, I believe they are. Maybe we'll turn to Frank for this because I know Jeannie has responded about this in the past.
Right, and definitely not large capital expenses because you don't have so much funding for this. And to be competitive, we're gonna
mm-hmm.
try to figure out what is the direct benefit to the community. But Frank, if you wanna, can you respond to that? Do you need Michelle to restate it for you?
Yeah, it sounds like it was let me repeat it, make sure I've got it straight. Capital expenses like paint can crusher or something else, that'd be equipment?
Yeah.
If they're needed for the project, within the cost principles and within program rules, that sort of thing sounds like it would be allowable with project officer approval when the grant is awarded. But everything's a case-by-case just to make sure that it complies with your rules and our rules at the same time.
Okay.
And that would specifically have to be in the budget.
Yeah.
And, of course, then it will be part of the evaluation process as we look to award grants.
Great. Thank you, Frank. Thank you, Frank. Okay. Turning back to the phone, do we have any questions from the phone? Okay. We have one from Roxana, another from Roxana in Ithaca, New York. What part of the partnership does a university represent? They are in government, they are private and public, they aren't really a community group.
Universities can apply for our grants. They're part of our eligible applicants criteria. So a university can apply. They can be the applicant. If they do not want to be the applicant, if they want to partner with a partnership, then they are strictly a partner, and they work that out with their organization who is applying.
Mm-hmm. So they aren't sort of in the triad that we mentioned, but many find them to be an extremely useful partner.
Right.
If there are in nearby universities.
Yeah, we've seen them used as technical assistants. We've seen them. We've seen professors who are engaged in that local partnership. You bring in their student interns
mm-hmm.
to help with some of that volunteering that somebody asked earlier. So we see them as a very important partner.
Mm-hmm.
But again, they can be the applicant.
Okay. I'll just take another over the internet. This is from Douglas, again, in Washington, who's asking again about his interagency group. The interagency group has been in place for a number of years and includes air, water, solid waste, public works, etc. We're really just looking for money to do some cleanup of future brownfields and prevent toxic discharges to our drinking water source that we've identified through the group's work to date. Oh, okay. It's not a question.
Right. And interagency implies that it's only the government sector,
mm-hmm.
not businesses, not community groups.
Yeah. So we'll note that interagency is certainly not enough of a partnership. Again, it's the affected community and local business as
yeah.
well.
And sometimes care is just not the right fit.
Absolutely. So we'll turn to the phones. Do we have any questions from the phone? Okay. We do have a question from Marcy in Nebraska. Again, about the page count question following up from before. She wants to make sure she's really clear on the page count and what falls within the 10 pages and what it does not. Looking at page 25 of the RFP, it states that the detailed budget is not considered part of the narrative project proposal
mm-hmm.
and that it individually cannot exceed two pages reading this suggests to me that even though the specified proposal outline includes a budget section mm-hmm. in the middle, this budget section will not be counted toward the 10-page limit.
Yeah, Marcy, I'm wondering if you have the right RFP. The RFP that's that's currently on the web says, distinctly says that it includes the budget and the 10 pagers. There was also an amendment that said that. So I'm confused about what you're reading, but let me give you some suggestions on how you can make it fit within your 10 pages. We have said throughout the RFP that people can put tables in the RFP or charts or things that will not be so much of a narrative. If you wanted to, you can do some of your evaluation criteria. You can do it in a table. And so maybe that's what you can do. The SF-424 doesn't count
right.
against your 10-page. But the 424A, but the narrative budget has to be a part of that 10 pages. Now, you do not have to do 2 pages for your narrative budget. We say up to 2 pages. So I've seen people do it in 1 page. And so you may want to try to think of it in that way as well.
And that's why people use attachments. Certain things may lend themselves to attachments, and you can think about that as well. For example, a classic one is the logic model as an attachment. If you do have attachments, though, make sure that you cite them in the narrative so that we know what to look for.
And I just want to reiterate that we did make an effort to go through this RFP earlier in the year before it went on the street to let people know that you could actually put boxes and tables and things in your RFP. It does not always have to be exactly descriptive, so that could make that could cut down on the page amount.
But 10 is the magic number.
10 is. Because after the number 10, we do not have to read anything else, Marcy.
Okay, I'll turn to the phone and see if we have any questions.
This is Michelle Uchiyama from Atlanta, Georgia. I have a question.
Yes, Michelle. Yes, go ahead, Michelle.
We have a community that has already organized to a certain level, and we're trying to determine whether we should apply for a level 1 or a level 2. We're undergoing a PACE EH study right now. We're only on step 4 of 13 of the study. Would it be more conducive for us to apply for a level 2 or a level 1?
Have you done the complete look across your neighborhood of all your risks, and have you done the consensus around what risks you should look at for the level 2?
No,
and have
we
you
have
done
not.
The prioritization?
No, we haven't. No, we have not.
Well, you have to do that
for a level 2.
For a level 2.
So it's
better for you to apply for a level 1. Actually, it makes you more competitive for a level 1, and we found that out when we've looked at different applications in the past.
And look at the evaluation criteria again, and, stack up where you are versus the level 2 criteria vis-a-vis level 1. That'll give you a sense as well.
Because we don't want to throw you out for being ineligible for a level 2, and because you haven't done that, you would be thrown out.
Yeah.
Okay.
There is no partial eligibility for a level 2.
Okay. Can I ask a second question?
Sure. Yeah. Go ahead, Michelle.
The second question is that there is a level 1 that was done in 2008 here in Atlanta. Is that going mm-hmm. to inhibit our ability to apply for one as well?
We have done, we do look at geographical diversity, but that's at the tail end of the selection. We have had more than one project in a city. Atlanta's a big place. So we have had more than one project in a city. So I would advise that if you feel strongly about your project, you should apply.
Okay. We do.
Okay.
All right. We have another question over the Internet. Are photos, this is from Vicki in Texas, are photos acceptable as part of the application?
Are they accessible as part of a 10-page application, or are they accessible as an attachment? Because I would, they're
any,
accessible.
Any part.
Yeah,
they're accessible as any part.
As long as we can print them.
And as long as we can.
And we won't be looking at JPEG files. You have to have your photo as a print-readable file, so it would have to be a WordPerfect or a PDF file.
And so, you know, if it's a
Word.
I'm an old guy.
Oh, man.
And so, you know, the only reason why I distinguish the two is because you only have 10 pages. So I would not, I mean, unless it's telling a great story in that picture, I would not put it in part of that 10 pages. That's just me. If you want to, unless a picture speaks 1,000 words, then it does. But it's going to take up some of your space.
They're certainly acceptable, though.
They are acceptable, mm-hmm. They are.
And think how it will bolster your application and how it supports the evaluation criteria.
Mm-hmm. Turning to the phones, do we have any questions over the phone? Okay. We have another over the Internet. This is from Barbara in Kansas. If a university is a partner and plans to receive some funding, because another entity plans to submit the proposal, is the university considered a contractor?
Well, you work that out with your applicant. We have two different ways that can happen: as a subaward grant, or as a subcontractor. But that part of our relationship is with the applicant, so you have to work that out with the applicant. Unless I don't know, Frank, you may want to add something here. About that, or is what I've stated enough? Craig, did you want to add anything? Okay,
right.
I guess what I'm sorry, go ahead, Craig.
I'm trying to get my phone unmuted, sorry. I've got nothing else to add to that.
Okay, so what I added was enough. So you work it out with the applicant, whether you're a subaward grantee or a subcontractor.
Right.
Do we have any questions over the phone? We do not have any questions over the Internet either. So let me check again with the phone because we may be wrapping up early.
Which is usually the case on the last call.
Yes.
Just so the rest of you know, we've had two calls already, and we've had about 200 people on each call. And when we have new questions and answers that are not already in the Q&A document, we will revise the question and answer document. So check our website, check for that revision. I think we will be making a revision probably next week.
I'm thinking midweek or so it should
okay.
be up there, although I have to say that the revisions will be sort of minor at the margins. Mm-hmm. I don't think we've found anything
that was
absolutely new and that we haven't said.
And just to remind you again, the applications are due March 9th.
Okay, another new question from the Internet. Cindy from Vermont, what happens if we submit under the CARE program a small portion of a larger grant project that we have applied for under another grant proposal? We then find out that we were awarded all the money under the larger grant program and don't need CARE to fund that particular task of the budget. Can we redirect the CARE funds to another portion of the project that needs to be done?
No,
because you are evaluated based on what you submitted.
Yeah.
And so, I mentioned we're at the evaluation process we have. So you've gone through the three levels of the evaluation process and you know, you're evaluated, and so there's no way you can just put something else in there. It wouldn't be fair to the other applicants.
It's also an accountability issue. We are accountable for what we award grants for, and it isn't then just up to us or the grantee to decide, oh, well, we'll do something else.
So they would, I'm guessing, forfeit these funds, and we would move to our next ranked
right.
grantee.
That's exactly right.
We select
so many to be awarded, and we have a prioritization list that we go down the list if an award does not work out.
Another question over the internet. Vicki from Texas, a federal agency that can do testing believes it is a conflict of interest for us to hire them to test water wells and a spring for harmful chemicals. Is it a conflict for them to submit a bid for the testing?
That's actually the bigger issue is the testing.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. I don't think that we pay for testing.
Well, in general, we've said that we expect CARE grantees, because CARE grants are pretty small in terms of the dollar amount, and almost always testing, monitoring is pretty expensive, to rely primarily upon existing data or partners who can get additional data if they want. In general, the CARE grant is not about funding data collection.
And we're really not about providing money to pay other federal agencies. You know, I don't think we've ever awarded any grant that paid another federal agency.
Frank?
You know, Frank, do you have can you jump in on this one?
Yeah, I can't think of any either. Through the grant process, through the internal interagency agreement process, which is something different. Yeah, but not under the grant process.
So this is this is a real stickler, Vicki.
This could be uncharted waters.
Yeah, and it doesn't look, it gives a bad appearance to me, and so I think we would have to put, if you were awarded, we would have to, during the award process, we would definitely have to have our EPA attorneys weigh in on this one.
Yeah.
Yeah, get them to do it for free.
Yeah.
Yeah, most
people likely
want
to know why they needed to be paid.
Right.
Okay, so last check. Any questions over the phone? Any burning questions people have thought of? Well, we thank you for your interest and your time, and wish you the best of luck.
And hopefully we'll see an application from you March 9th.
Before 4 o'clock.
Before 4 o'clock.
Eastern Standard Time.
Before 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Have a wonderful afternoon and weekend.
Thank you.
And then the message is sent back.